All right, we are going to conclude this very busy day here on MSD with a little bit of a combination between market update and corporate update. Happy to welcome in Matt Battiali, who is the CEO over at Quetzal Copper. They do trade on the TSX Venture Exchange with the symbol Q, and they are, I guess, some exciting news ahead of them as it looks like this drill program there of theirs at the Christinas project is about to ramp up. But we're going to table that. I know everybody's excited, Matt, about learning more about your drill program. But listen, I'm first going to ask you to put on your analysis hat back on. If you were a newsletter writer once again, you're watching this move in copper as it the last 2 days has attempted to bust through that $5 per pound level and has been, you know, rejected there, but still elevated nonetheless. You look at this move that copper's put in the last couple months. It's been fast and extreme in a short period of time, faster than it usually makes when it moves higher like that. You know, what are you watching here? What are the tailwinds of copper and what are the headwinds that you're seeing here for the market?
Yeah, it's finally showing up in the copper price. But this is sort of the math that a lot of us have been doing for, you know, a couple of years now with the great electrification. You know, and I say that only kind of euphemistically, but, you know, I don't know about you, but I suddenly have a battery powered lawnmower, which I'd never had before. You know, my father-in-law bought a battery powered chainsaw, which I laughed at until I'm like, this thing is damn handy. You don't have to have all the cans of fuel stored and there's no oil and it's just great. So, you know, there's been that creep for the last couple of years of electricity and battery operated tools making it into our daily lives. And then, you know, the proliferation of electric vehicles has been pretty, the uptake has been pretty good. I mean, I find that I have to be a lot more alert now on street corners in Lake Toronto because these electric vehicles are quiet as hell and there are more of them. So they can sneak up on you where the old battered Chevys, the gas guzzlers didn't. So, you know, I think that there's that kind of that sneaky tailwind that everybody just kind of normalized that move toward electric vehicles and electric appliances and the, you know, the old saw about solar panels and windmills that we all were like, oh yeah, yeah, whatever. But the additional tailwinds came from some of the government, programs. For example, in the States, there's a big subsidy if you buy an electric vehicle. And, you know, it's like a $7,500 tax break, but you have to source your copper and lithium domestically or with a trading partner. So suddenly there's, you know, that's an additional tailwind to demand. The sneaky thing, the thing that's really started to show up in the last couple of months on people's radar is how much electricity AI uses. Mm-hmm. And so these big data centers, these big server farms that it takes to support AI. You know, I didn't realize it, but Northern Virginia is the single largest hub for these giant server farms. And their demand on electricity is massive. Like it's really going to move the needle for overall global demand for electricity. But the server farms themselves require a lot of copper. And so When you look at this, it is all sort of coming together at a time when there are headwinds for supply. So, you know, hurricane tailwinds, but people still don't want to permit new mines. You have the country of Panama basically said after, you know, I don't even know how many years they were working on Cobre Panama, how many millions, if not billions of dollars were spent exploring and developing that deposit. The government basically said, yeah, all those agreements we had with you that we've been fine with up until this point, yeah, we changed our mind. Mm-hmm. And it's all gone. 1% of global copper supply gone. And the existing mines, I mean, I did a study a couple of years ago on the age, just the production ages of the major copper mines. And I think the average production age is 60 years of the major copper mines. These are old. And every year the head grade gets a little lower and a little lower. You know, we joke about a Highland Valley, Tex Highland Valley mine in BC. I mean, their head grade is getting so low, they might as well be mining air next. I mean, it's just that low. So, and the demand, when you put them together, Brent Cook used to have a slide of how many giant new copper mines we needed to find and put in production every year to kind of make that gap come together. And it's just impossible. Yeah. So the thing that I saw recently was the premium for copper concentrates. Did you see that?
Oh, the you know, TCRC charges went negative.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Wild.
There just isn't any concentrate available. So you're going to see, you know, refineries are going to end up shutting down,
right?
Because they just can't get the concentrates. So.
It's incredible. Yeah.
So that's what I see.
Okay. I'm just curious, Matt, you know, it wasn't too long ago when, especially during the lithium craze, 2 years ago, give or take, we were seeing, you know, car manufacturers come in and sign agreements for offtakes from specific projects, right? And to specific companies.
Yeah.
And I know this is, there's a little bit of apples and oranges comparison here with the copper supply, but like, is it out of the ordinary to maybe think maybe companies that are manufacturing, constructing data centers like the Amazons, the Microsofts, the Metas, that they have got to start thinking about supplying or sourcing their own supply of copper? I mean, I know it's like kind of it's a different product, right? Copper wiring for electronics.
No, I think we're on the same page. I certainly think that there has to be some new source of financing that has to come into this market. There has to be, right? Because we just can't, they're right now to get a mine built is damn near impossible. It's very hard it's very hard to convince a bank to lend you $1 billion with no guarantee of payment for at least 10 years while you go through all the permitting and the construction. And then if it's not in a safe jurisdiction, you have the chance. I mean, the risks are just astronomical. So where do you find your capital? How do you build it? And I do think that, you know, you look at Apple or Google, how much cash they're sitting on right now, or Nvidia. These are companies that could be players in the space. And yeah, it would make sense. I mean, why wouldn't you, if you're one of these major tech companies and you're going to build a massive server farm, why wouldn't you put a stream on? You know, when you look back at Newmont way back in the day, I believe that their guys put hedges on oil sands. Like, I believe they bought they invested in oil sands companies because that was their biggest cost was fuel. Mm-hmm. So they knew that by, you know, offsetting their fuel cost by investing in oil companies, like, that made sense. I see that as perfectly reasonable.
Okay. With this latest move in copper, you know, Matt, you and I are pretty seasoned at watching these price moves like this. When it moves up that quickly, you know, at least I sit back in my chair and I kind of scratch in my back of my head and I'm saying, I don't know, this looks a little bit more speculative than anything else. I mean, and the things move so fast, you could make the arguments it's due for a little bit of a calming correction, whatever you want to call it, but I mean, is this latest move, do you see it as mere speculative, or is it really just fundamental moves based on the lack of supply?
I think that's a great question. The thing is, the copper market is huge, right? And so for this to be speculative, like, that's a lot of speculative money coming in. But I think it's a combination, personally. You know, that's like, this is the worst possible answer. The sitting on the fence answer, but you also have, in addition to that math, that supply demand math we just talked about, you have inflation, you know, and so people have been running around yelling about the gold price move, which has been a pretty astronomical move, not translating very well to the valuations of the gold miners because the costs of everything else that go into building a mine have come up. Right. Mm-hmm. And so when I, in very simple terms, when I look at a gold, any kind of a mine, it's a commodity swap, right? It's the value of the material that you're mining has to be greater than the cost of all the commodities, the steel and the concrete and the rubber for the tires and the diesel fuel, and as you get, even though the gold prices come up, when you lift all these other costs, and including wages, you lift all these other costs alongside of them, the margins don't change, right? And so it wouldn't surprise me to if a big portion of the rise in copper is simply a reflection in inflationary costs of mining copper.
Okay. Well, let's go to the other half of this conversation here, Matt. I do want to ask you about Quetzal Copper, because after your recent IPO, the work has continued. You've done some early stage exploration, and maybe let's focus on that Christinas target there within the Christinas project you have in Chihuahua, Mexico. Surface rock chip samples. If you like nice copper perspectiveness, you're going to like 2.4% copper over a 3.8 meter a sample trend there. There are also some silver credits in there that we should note that well. What is the latest? I mean, how is Christina shaping up, and what's the plan here this summer?
Well, I'm really excited. You want the ticket to eternal youth? send me more of those surface samples, or yeah, send me some drill core. I was very happy that, you know, Christinas is an old, it was mined in the 40s. Just the oxide was taken off the top. It's what we call a carbonate replacement deposit. So, you know, you had a big volcano that never made it all the way to the surface, heated up all the fluids and pressurized them, and they blasted their way out. As they got to where our project is, they started following existing plumbing. So, you know, fault traces, but also the layers between sedimentary rocks. And so when you look at the surface of these things, you have these veins of copper that came up, and they just mined the top of these in the 40s. And in 2014, a group called Cyprium came in and did a dozen drill holes and left us with some spectacular intercepts, you know, 10 meters of 1.4% copper. And within that, you had 3 or 4 meters of plus 3% copper, and no one ever followed up on it. It just kind of, you know, 2014 was a terrible time to be looking for new copper projects or trying to get them financed. And it just kind of got lost in the shuffle, and we were able to get it in this bear market that, you know, there were projects that were just available that I couldn't believe it. Honestly, I mean, even in that just speaks to how terrible this bear market was, that a project like this with those kind of intercepts, it was only drilled down to 80 meters, only had a dozen drill holes in it, and it didn't get any love. So, I mean, for us, it's brilliant, because we're going to go down to Mexico. We just hired the drilling crew, so we should be moving to site next week. You know, we'll put 1,500 to 3,000 meters in the ground. We're going to do some downhole geophysics, because those sulfides, the copper sulfides, conduct electricity really, really well. So if we can go down the hole and put the tool into the sulfide zone where we hit it, we'll get a much better understanding of kind of the scale and the dimensions of this thing. Mm-hmm. But yeah, the goal to it is, you know, if you think of a tree branch, right, the top of Christinas where they mine, we think is like the very tips of the tree branch. And so what we want to do is come down below where all the old existing drilling was and try and find where it connects to the limb. Yeah. We're looking for wider areas, and we want to see that if that grade is consistent, because really, if we can prove high grade and scale here, and to back up the surface trace of this thing, we've mapped it out for 1.25 kilometers at surface of plus 1% copper in samples. So, you know, we're open on strike, we're open at depth, and we're drilling this month. I mean, that's it, right?
Yeah. So, but there's still some oxide. Yuli, there's still some oxide left closer to surface.
Yeah. So we did there historically. There was an electromagnetic survey done on it, and the electricity doesn't conduct at all in oxide. Mm-hmm. And so when you look at it, we know where the oxide was mined, and there's a gap, and then you go down below it, and all of a sudden you pick up the sulfides. So there is still some oxide copper there. Okay. but it won't be material to what we're looking for. We're looking for the big, thick sulfide intercepts.
Okay. It's not a huge drill program. You're thinking up to 3,000 meters here.
Yeah, depending on the joint. Really, this is very preliminary. Mm-hmm. And this is kind of Quetzal's business model. You know, we don't want to do a first pass 10,000 meter drill program on something. These are options. So we want to do very simple binary tests. I come from an oil and gas background, and oil and gas, for those folks who don't invest in it, it's very simple. You drill a hole. If the fluid comes out black, you made money. If it comes out clear, you go to the next thing, right? It's none of this, oh, we learned something. Yeah, I learned something too. I'm going to invest in the oil and gas stuff. But with this one, you know, if we're able to prove the concept that these do get wider with depth and they come together and the grade maintains what we see at shallower depths, it's a step change for Quetzal. It's really a big deal.
All right. So expecting news that the drilling program has commenced here shortly, I'd assume.
Yeah, a couple of weeks probably. Okay. We got to get everybody on site. We have one more meeting down there and then we're ready to go.
Okay. All right. Well, let's be paying attention to that, Matt. Let's talk about some of those first drill passes, come with results and see what you found. And look forward to
that. I'm happy to come back.
Yeah,
it's good news.
All right. That's Matt Battioli. He's a great guy, especially talking copper markets and exploration. He is the CEO of Quetzal Copper, everybody. They trade on the venture with the symbol Q. Matt, have a great rest of your day. Thanks so much.
You too, Trevor. Thank you.
The information presented should not be considered investment advice. Mining Stock Daily and its affiliates are not responsible for any loss arising from any investment decision in connection with the material presented herein. Please do your own research or speak with a licensed financial representative before making any investment decisions.